Caravaggio came into the kitchen to find Hannah sitting hunched over the table. He could not see her face or her arms tucked in under her body, only the naked back, the bare shoulders. She was not still or asleep. With each shudder her head shook over the table. Caravaggio stood there. Those who weep lose more energy than they lose during any other act. It was not yet dawn. "Hannah," he said, and she stilled herself as if she could be camouflaged by stillness. "Hannah." She began to moan so the sound would be a barrier between them, a river across which she could not be reached. He was uncertain at first about touching her in her nakedness. Said Hannah, and then lay his bandaged hand on her shoulder. She did not stop shaking. She raised herself, her head down still, then stood up against him as if dragging herself away from the magnet of the table. "Don't touch me if you're going to try and fuck me," she said. The skin pale above her skirt, which was all she wore in this kitchen, as if she had risen from the bed, dressed partially, and come out here, the cool air from the hills entering the kitchen doorway and cloaking her. "Hannah, why do you adore him so much?" "I love him," she said. "You don't love him. You adore him." "Go away, Caravaggio, please." "You've tied yourself to a corpse for some reason." "He is a saint, I think, a despairing saint. Are there such things? Our desire is to protect them." "He doesn't even care," Caravaggio said. "I can love him." "A 20-year-old who throws herself out of the world to love a ghost." Caravaggio paused. "You have to protect yourself from sadness. Sadness is very close to hate. Let me tell you this. This is the thing I learned. If you've taken someone else's poison, thinking you can cure them by sharing it, you will instead store it within you. Those men in the desert were smarter than you. They assumed he could be useful, so they saved him. But when he was no longer useful, they left him." "Leave me alone," Hannah said. In her childhood, Hannah's classroom had been Caravaggio. He had taught her the somersault. Now, with his hands always in his pockets, he just gestures with his shoulders. Who knew what country the war had made him live in? She herself had been trained at Women's College Hospital and then sent overseas during the Sicilian invasion. That was 1943. The 1st Canadian Infantry Division worked its way up Italy, and the destroyed bodies were fed back to the field hospitals like mud, passed back by tunnelers in the dark. After the Battle of Arezzo, when the first barrage of troops recoiled, she was surrounded day and night by their wounds. After 3 full days without rest, she finally lay down on the floor beside a mattress where someone lay dead and slept for 12 hours, closing her eyes against the world around her. When she woke, she picked up a pair of scissors out of the porcelain bowl, leaned over and began to cut her hair, not concerned with shape or length, just cutting it away, the irritation of its presence during the previous day still in her mind. When she had bent forward and her hair had touched blood in a wound, she would have nothing to link her, to lock her to death. She gripped what was left to make sure there were no more strands and turned again to face the rooms full of the wounded. She never looked at herself in mirrors again. Nothing in her spirit or past had taught her to be a nurse, but cutting her hair was a contract, and it lasted until they were bivouacked in the Villa San Girolamo north of Florence. Here there were 4 other nurses, 2 doctors, 100 patients. The war in Italy moved farther north, and they were what had been left behind. Then, during the celebrations of some local victory, she had said she was not going back to Florence or Rome or any other hospital. Her war was over. She would remain with the one burned man they called the English patient, who, it was now clear to her, should never be moved because of the fragility of his limbs. Till the nuns reclaimed it, she would sit in this villa with the Englishman. There was something about him she wanted to learn, grow into, and hide in, where she could turn away from being an adult. There was some little waltz in the way he spoke to her and the way he thought. She wanted to save him, this nameless, almost faceless man who had been one of the 200 or so placed in her care during the invasion north.